What is going on, my people, everyone across this great nation? Hope you had a good 4th of July. Three and Out podcast. John Middlecoff, Texas blowing up. Planned on doing this a lot earlier today. It's about 7 o'clock on a Monday night. But, you know, I'm on a little staycation, so I just kind of put it off. And then I started watching the Home Run Derby. Jock Peterson and Vlad Guerrero Jr. just going at it. Jock Peterson, actually, high school teammate, and was also, I think, a high school wide receiver. His teammate was Devontae Adams, Green Bay Packers star wide receiver, Palo Alto High School, also the high school of Jim Harbaugh. So a lot of people have, Jock Peterson, you know, could have been a football player, but he hits bombs. Doesn't hit for average, but he hits bombs. You know, this is, we're in the doldrums right now. Everyone in the NFL texting a couple buddies. They're in the middle of vacations, spread out all over the world. France, Nantucket. I don't know Belichick, but if I did, he's in Nantucket. Follow Linda on Instagram. They're just all over, kicking it, hanging out. We got a couple weeks left, and football's about to start. I tweeted out a little earlier. I was at the gym this afternoon. We got, I mean, I pay so much goddamn money for the gym. It better be nice. But I got this. We got a big flat screen TV and some chairs where you can chill in the gym locker room, the men's locker room. I don't know what the women's locker room has. Not that I should or care. But in the men's locker room, there's a big TV. It's always, you know, got a basketball game on, football game on, whatever. Whatever season it's on, golf, you know, World Cup, you name it. Something always on going on. Now, if you go really early in the morning, sometimes I got, like, news on. But for the most part, it's always, you know, a game. Today, you know, early July 8th, I walk by, and there's, like, three dudes. I almost said six. I wanted to hype it up. But it was legitimately three guys just watching the television, which was the Green Bay Packers against the Pittsburgh Steelers from 2009. And they were pretty locked in. I'm like, God, people are getting the itch. I'm getting the itch. And I got the itch a little bit this morning, read about Chris Ballard. He wrote the MMQB. I don't think it's called that anymore. But whatever Peter King calls his article. I got something that I took away from that I think that, you know, more people in the NFL can use. Some thoughts on just a little bit of a quarterback roundtable. For some MVP bets. Albert Breer wrote an article on just some of the young college quarterbacks and just some initial takes on those guys before we head into the season. And then today we'll do the NFC North over-unders. Bears, Vikings, Green Bay, Detroit. But I want to start with this. And also, I'm out of Middlecoff mailbag questions, so you got to slide up in my DMs. Fill those bad boys up. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle, and you can ask whatever you want, and I'll answer them. Starting Friday again, I just don't have any questions. You guys have been partying too hard for July 4th. I get it, but I need you to come back and fill me with a little content. You guys always ask good questions, and it's that time. I need you, so I'm calling the people. But I want to start with this. Chris Ballard, who, you know, Colin obviously knows really well. I know a bunch of people. I know Matt Nagy became really, really good friends with him when he was with him in Kansas City. Coach Reed loves him. Everyone seems to love Chris Ballard that have been around. I don't know him at all. I've never met him. But it's pretty clear he's pretty special, you know? Like, he's kind of got it. And he wrote this article. I highly recommend just go to Peter King's Twitter account and you can click it. I don't even know what website Peter King writes for. I can't even keep up with all the movement. But he wrote the article for Peter, and it was really good. And he kind of got in-depth as much as he could without revealing some secrets. And if you watched his YouTube series, the one thing that you saw that he does a really good job of, and clearly the top personnel departments do this, is he relies on his scouts. Like, they go into a meeting, and it's an open forum. You can say whatever you want. If you put in the work, and you have conviction, and you believe something, you get on the table, and you fight for the player. But the thing is, I would imagine they don't have that much disconnect in the room. Because one thing that he wrote about was how they have this green beret that helps them, like, get around a lot of the fluff and the BS. When I was in Philly, we used to, what was the term that we used to call, not a fraud, I have to think of the term, it's escaping my mind right now. We used to call him a con. So, like, if you walked, it was a con man. If you walked into the meeting in a suit, or when we brought you on a top 30 visit, and you'd been arrested a couple times or just done stupid shit, and you had on like a three-piece suit, you were just a con man. Like, this is football. You can wear just normal clothes. We're just having a normal conversation. We got to get to the bottom of it. Don't be a con man. And I think the one thing that clearly Indy does very, very well is they know exactly what they were looking for. And I think that's always separated New England because their GM has been their head coach. So it's been a streamlined process. And I think with Seattle, they obviously are on the same page and have been for years. Philly, with Joe Douglas and Howie and what they've done the last two or three years with Doug Peterson, all on the same page. Andy with Dorsey and now with Veach, completely on the same page. And I think what you're seeing Chris Ballard do in a short period of time, it's not just him. And like he said in this article, yeah, I'm the ultimate decision maker, but I ask everyone for their opinion. And when you have a scouting department that is all locked in and all looking for the same thing, in the sense of, not that it's like a groupthink and we're all trying to find, like, get a consensus on something, but you all know exactly what you want at every position. And what type, as much as you are scouting the player, he had a great line in this. He said, the talent of a player, and he learned this, I think, from Jerry Angelo, he said, worked for him forever in Chicago. The talent of a player determines his ceiling, but his football character, meaning how hard he works, how much he cares about the game, you know, just his drive, his toughness, all that stuff, determines his floor. And when you become a good team, and I was thinking about this today, when you become a good team, you stop drafting anywhere near the top 10. I mean, the Patriots always draft like 28 to 32. Like the Chiefs for the last, since Andy's been there, have always drafted in the 20s. The Colts, now that Ballard's got this thing and they got a coach, are always going to draft in the 20s. Seattle's always drafting in the 20s. There's two routes you can take in the 20s. You can go home run derby and try to hit a home run. And there's usually a reason that guy is there, if he quote-unquote has top 10 talent, but he fell to you at 24. Or you can try to hit a little bit, you're just knowing you're going to hit a double. Because the one thing, when you take a swing and you miss, it's pretty devastating when you're a good team, because you are depending on these players to be good. Like Chris Ballard showed last year, he was just trying to hit doubles. Now, when you get really high football character guys and people that care, a guy can kind of overachieve. So a double can turn into a triple. Darius Leonard, obviously last year Quentin Nelson was a home run type swing because you were drafting number 6. But when you start nailing people in the late first rounds and in the second round, that means you know what you're doing. And to me, this guy just has this humility to him, has this kind of toughness aspect to him, has this, you know, as an evaluator, he's not really looking to be the sexiest guy in the room. You know, some people love the super fast guys, the super good-looking guys when they get off the bus. Like, he just wants football players. And I think the one thing, and Bill Polian is a Hall of Fame executive, but he had, sometimes he would take some big swings late in the 20s. And listen, you got Peyton Manning. So that was just his philosophy, and it burned them a couple times. Like, so far with Chris Ballard, he's kind of telling you, like, when I'm drafting at 24, 28, 27, we're looking to just get solid players. And we know we have elite players, and we're going to have to get elite players other ways. Like, you're not going to get, more than likely, a Hall of Famer at 28. But if you get an 8-year starter, you're in pretty good shape. I've seen countless. I saw Balky do it multiple times. Once that team got good, he couldn't hit on a player in the late 20s. And it eventually caught up to him and it crippled the team. But the one thing the Colts have going for them is this scouting department and this mindset and this collective effort as a group being led by this guy. I'm all in. I'm a sucker for an article. Now, granted, he wrote the article, but everything I've heard about this guy, everything I've seen his team do, how well he handled last year, Josh McDaniels leaving him at the altar to get Frank Reich. I mean, that was not an easy situation. And it looks like he kind of hit a home run on that hire. Who knows that maybe he's better off with that hire than he is would have been with Josh McDaniels. Now, don't get me wrong. I thought Josh McDaniels was the right guy for him to hire. Who would have known that he would have backed out last minute? You know, and that might be an all-time mistake for Josh McDaniels. But I'll tell you this, for all the Colts fans listening, I'm buying what he's selling. Okay, let's dive into some of the quarterback stuff. And I'm going to start with Albert Breer I came across his article on Twitter, basically just dove into all the top quarterback prospects coming into this season. Some of them, Utah State has a guy. Washington's going to have Eason, who transferred from Georgia. There are a lot of guys kind of spread out around the country. We'll see how this Michigan guy, Shea Patterson, if he can grow. But it's really a three-headed star class right now, at least on paper. Two at Alabama, from at Georgia, and because Clemson guy is not eligible, and Herbert at Oregon. And he got a bunch of good quotes, you know, like Albert always does. I actually think Albert has done a fantastic job transitioning from Peter King at the MMQB. He knows a lot of people in the league, a lot of scouting directors, a lot of scouts, and he just gets good quotes. I mean, you know when people that cover the NFL don't know people in the NFL, and you know when you cover when you read someone that covers the NFL that knows people in the NFL. I'm not talking agents. I'm talking scouting directors. I'm talking GMs, and I'm talking coaches. Because if you can't get that perspective, you're wasting everyone's time. Because that's what matters. That's who's going to draft the players. That's who's going to play the players. So if you're not getting quotes from GMs and coaches, I don't put much stock into you as a reporter. Not trying to be an asshole. It's just a fact. But I want to touch on all three guys. I'm going to start with Tua. And Trent Dilfer was quoted in this article. He does that Elite 11 camp, and they've been around, spent a lot of time around him. I know a couple people at Alabama. I mean, the way they were talking about this guy 2 years ago was basically like Russell Wilson meets Steve Young. And I think Trent Dilfer compared him to Drew Brees. Or maybe some people at Alabama that are there now compared him to Drew Brees in the sense that that's the guy that, ironically, Saban missed on. I think this guy's pretty special. And in the NFL, we know a couple things have gone out the window. Height at quarterback is not a big deal anymore. Now, you can't be 5'5", but Tua's taller than Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray went one. Now, Tua is not an elite athlete, but the one thing Tua is very, very accurate. If you're very, very accurate in the NFL, it's hard to fail. I mean, Alex Smith had a hell of a career just because he was really, really accurate. Now, Tua's arm's better than Alex. Now, the hard part about Tua is that sometimes when you're playing at an elite program, it's hard to evaluate you because your team is so much better than everyone else. And he's playing with a wide receiver, number four, Jerry Jeudy, that's a top 10 pick next year. I mean, Jerry Jeudy might be a top 5 pick. Jerry Jeudy is a freak. So that's not going to hurt him, but I do think the reason we quote-unquote pick these quarterbacks apart is because I'm going to draft one of these guys in the top 5, and then one day I hope to pay him like $150, $200 million. I love it when like, I can't believe they're picking this guy apart. Like, that's the business, people. Like, that's the whole point of this whole deal. Because if you don't pick him apart and you end up taking the wrong guy, good luck to you and your franchise. Because you're going to suck. I'll promise you that. And from what I've seen, I think Tua is an excellent prospect. And I think he's a borderline. It's hard to say this before a season even starts, but I'm pretty confident he's like a top 10 lock. Now, we've seen shit change, but unless non-injury, I don't see how he doesn't go in the top 10. Jake Fromm, one thing I hadn't thought about that Breer was quoted, I think it was either a scout or a coach that said they were so impressed. Justin Fields, who's now at Ohio State, was the number one overall recruit at quarterback, was more dynamic than Fromm, given that he can really run, just complete freak. Now, I think sometimes, like the NFL, we put some stock into that. And I say we, like, I'm not there. I'm just a media guy now. But you know what I mean. That, like, it is a big deal being a 5-star recruit, being the number one overall recruit, whatever. But you're also, once you get to the NFL, you're 3 or 4 years removed from that. But it is a big deal at the time when you beat out a guy that's 1 year younger than you, and he can't take over. Because we know that the Georgia coaches wanted Justin Fields to be the quarterback. Couldn't beat him out. He had a transfer because Jake Fromm was just that good. Now, I talked to Move the Sticks, Daniel Jeremiah, on my other podcast with Haberman Middlecoff. Listen to that bad boy. We talk a lot of football there too. And he said that he had talked to some people around the NFL that are a little unsure. But it was the first time that I thought, wow, this kid's got something. Eason, number one recruit, transferred. Fields, even a better recruit, had to transfer. And basically what Albert Breer's article was saying is that Jake Fromm has had pressure on him 24/7, 365 since he's been there. He's had no room for error. They literally wanted to replace him last year and they couldn't. So I get maybe he's not the most physically gifted guy. I actually think his comp, just TV scouting him the last couple years, probably an Alex Smith type guy. Doesn't have a great arm, but clearly he's really smart, really competitive, and he's got something because they can't get rid of him. Now, this is a big year for him, but if he plays well, I don't see how he's not a first-round player. Now, the one thing, I'm going to keep saying all these first-round guys because we're going to get into Justin Herbert right now. There aren't that many spots, right? It's like Russell Westbrook's about to get traded in the NBA. Well, bring up the NBA standings. Most teams have pretty established point guards. Like, most teams in the NFL have quarterbacks. And obviously they have quarterbacks. It's football, you got to have a quarterback. But I mean quarterbacks that they either believe in or they've recently drafted high. There aren't that many teams in the NFL that have openings. Think about the last 5 or 6 years. How many guys have come into this league? Like, starting in like 2014, Derek Carr, Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously the Bakers, the Sam Darnolds, the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons. I mean, I'm up 10 guys in like the last 5 years. I'm probably Deshaun Watson, Mitch Trubisky. That's like 12. It's like, you know, more than a third of the league has been drafted in the last 5 years. That's pretty nuts. And then Justin Herbert. To me, he's my biggest red flag. He's going to get drafted high. Like, he's a borderline first-round lock because of his physical tools. But he's got a lot of pressure on him this year. The Pac-12's down. He opens his season with Auburn. I think it might be in Jerry's Palace. Maybe it's in Atlanta. I'm not exactly sure where that game is. But that's going to be, everyone's watching. Oregon's a top 10 team. Hell, they might even be higher whenever the preseason rankings come out. But they got to win that game. Now, if they win that game, there's going to be a lot of momentum. Everyone's going to be like, they're a playoff team. They lose that game, they're screwed. But, I mean, he's not necessarily screwed. But I'm just saying, like, the hype that could come by winning that game for this player, we could be, he has the momentum, plus the physical attributes, plus all the character stuff, to be the number one overall pick next year. Now, he also has the greatest variance of, like, it could go the other way. But we've also seen, like, I saw Josh Allen, who I think there are some similarities as a player. Now, Herbert's much more polished, but I'm just saying, like, a guy with great physical ability that was terrible in college still went in the top 10. So even if he had a really down season, I don't see how he falls that far in the draft. But I think no player has more to gain by just kind of dominating and his team playing well, because Tua's kind of already Tua, right? From is going to have some physical limitations. Like, Herbert has all the physical positive attributes. He's got this huge arm. He's a good athlete, high character guy, at a big program. But they got to win a little bit. And it's going to be on his shoulders to get the job done. And we're all going to be watching. God, I can't wait. Auburn, what, July 8th? That game's probably like August 30th. I mean, we're about, you know, a month and a half away. Not that far. So it's going to be fun. It looks like we're going to have a pretty good quarterback class, definitely just at the top with those three guys. And then, like, every year, I'll be honest, I didn't know who the hell Daniel Jones was last year at this time. I couldn't have pointed him out of the lineup. I didn't know probably anything about him. So, and that was the one thing Breer wrote in there, that, like, there are a couple other guys just to keep an eye on, and they'll pop up. Like, we'll have a feel for those guys like 3 or 4 games into the season. But right now, there's a senior quarterback somewhere or an underclassman somewhere that we're not talking about that's going to come out and ball. And that's what makes football so fun, is because NFL, the season, like, the college season goes hand in hand with the NFL season, because you're just, it's basically the minor leagues. Like, in baseball, you get drafted, I don't see you for 3 years. And the Giants drafted this kid, Joey Bart, number 2 overall 2 years ago. He's like the best catching prospect in forever. And I'm not going to see him for like 2 years. I'm not patient enough to wait. Like, I want to see the guy, and then I want you to draft him, and then I want you to play. Like, that's what society demands in 2019. And that's what football gives us. And then there are a couple other things I saw. I've talked a little bit about this, but the MVP odds, I think right now you can get some pretty good odds. I looked, the last time a guy has won back-to-back MVPs, Peyton Manning did it twice, like in the last 20 years, and then obviously Favre did it in the late 90s, actually won 3 in a row. But it doesn't happen that often. So 2 people, Peyton Manning and Brett Favre, in the last like 35 years have done it. So it's very difficult. And obviously, when Peyton did it, it was 08, 09, and 04, 03. Like, he was pretty well established into his career. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, what was so crazy about last year, while it was his second season, it was his first year as a starter. So I would probably not bet on him to win it. Though, is there a chance he's like an all-time great and he just rattles off like four straight MVPs? Maybe. But for betting odds, to me, the guy that I like, and it kind of hints back to what I opened the show with, is I believe in the Colts. I think the Colts could win 12, 13, 14 games. And if they are the number one seed, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility, though a little difficult just because their division is hard, but they don't have the first place schedule because the Texans do. But Lockett plus eight, basically 8-1. Last year he was 39-15. So if that number could get to like 43-12, and they go 13-3, you just watch Andrew Luck. He's bound to win an MVP in his career. I like those odds. And then the other guy that I think's got a chance for a big year. I think his team's going to be really good. It wouldn't shock me if they're like a 1 or 2 seed because they win like 12 or 13 games, would be the Atlanta Falcons. Matt Ryan last year was 35 touchdowns and 7 picks. Everyone that plays fantasy knows like he had a pretty damn good year. The defense was atrocious. It wasn't his fault. They were throwing touchdowns. You can get him right now, the book I got, 28-1. 28-1. Now, the one thing that leaves me hesitant a little bit is like, when you think of Matt Ryan, is he a 2-time MVP? Like that would be the one thing. Like Aaron Rodgers won 2 MVPs. Is Matt Ryan going to win 2 MVPs? I mean, maybe he is. And then the other non-quarterback, non-quarterbacks don't win this award. You know, beside Adrian Peterson coming back from an ACL running for 2,000 yards, like it doesn't usually happen. But think about this. What if I told you the Jets went 10-6? And Le'Veon Bell just had like a Marshall Faulk type season. Remember when Marshall Faulk won the MVP, I think back in, would have been 2001? And just has like 25, 28 touchdowns. You know, like 13 on the ground, another 13 catching the ball, rushes for like 1,400, catches 90 balls, and has 1,000 yards in the air. Like, I'm just, to me at, what are his odds? I think his odds were like 80-1. I just like them as just a, maybe it was 40-1. I didn't write it down, but it was big. It would have been my big Hail Mary, though very unlikely, and I wouldn't put much money on it. Okay, let's get to the NFC North. We've done the AFC East. We've done the NFC East. We've done the NFC South. We've done the AFC South. We've done the AFC North. Now we will do the NFC North. So then, we just have the West. There's no Central in football, huh? So yeah, we're running out of teams here. Getting us through the slow times. Getting us through the slow times. Okay. Chicago, Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit. Start with my favorite team. Listen, you guys know I'm biased. My guy Matt Nagy is the head coach. A couple guys on the staff that I know. Known for a long time. So I'm rooting for the Bears. I parachuted in when they hired Nagy, and I became a Bears fan. I probably root first and foremost for my two teams in the Bay Area, more so the Niners, because I profit from their success. If they do well, more people listen is good for my business. But for this, like nationally, I don't really care. You know, I just root for the people I know. Like, I'm rooting for the Bears. And luckily, I'm not that crazy, because last year they're good. Like, clearly they're pretty good. To me, the biggest question mark I have, by far, for the team with the best odds to win this division, is their defense. Now, on paper, their defense is absolutely stacked. And you talk to people on that staff, they go, geez Louise, we look good in practice. But what will the drop-off be on game day with Chuck Pagano and Vic Fangio? Because I think it's pretty well established. Vic Fangio is probably the best defensive coordinator the last 10 years. What he did in San Francisco, and then what he did in Chicago. Like, his teams kick ass and take names. Now, don't forget, just because Ryan Grigson basically screwed Chuck Pagano. Ryan Grigson had all the power, couldn't pick a player to save his life, somehow kept the job there for 5 years, just because he happened to fall into Andrew Luck. Like, I don't totally hold all the indie stuff against Chuck. Now, he's not a head coach. But don't forget, he was in Baltimore for a long time with Ray Lewis. And he was very, very, very highly thought of. Now, we're going to see. There's a lot of pressure because this team, he's inheriting arguably the best defense in the league, with everyone coming back. They're all kind of like young and in their prime. And the expectation for this team is kind of to, you know, make a Super Bowl run. I would say Super Bowl would be strong. But like NFC Championship game, I mean, they just had a home playoff game. Usually the next step, look at the Rams 2 years ago. Hosted a home playoff game and lost. Next year they made the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think that's totally unrealistic when you view, well, the head coach is an offensive guy. Mitch, there's a lot there to work with. They have a bunch of pieces on offense. Their offensive line's good. They have good receivers now. They drafted the kid last year in the second round, Miller. They got Allen Robinson. They got rid of Jordan Howard because he wasn't a great scheme fit. They got Tariq Cohen. They drafted, I can't remember what school the running back they drafted on, but I know they really like him. Obviously, I'm trying to think. Eagles drafted the guy from Penn State. The Rams, I get my mid-round running backs mixed up, but they're high on the rookie running back. And obviously, the defense speaks for itself. Khalil Mack, him and Aaron Donald, the best two players, non-quarterback on defense in the league. Hakeem Hicks, I don't even know if he's underrated anymore. Absolute monster. Roquan Smith is a badass. I mean, their secondary is just really good. They're just really good. I mean, their team is loaded. So, I like them to go over 9.5. To win the division plus 170, I don't feel quite as strong because I actually think the division's a little better than I've been kind of talking about it, just looking at it. Because I do think Minnesota, who over under 9, you could argue they might be more complete than the Bears because their defense is also elite, at least on paper. And Mike Zimmer is just a better defensive coach than Chuck Pagano. And offensively, they just have more pieces than the Bears. I mean, the wide receivers tandem speaks for itself. Thielen and Diggs, those two are awesome. Somehow they were going to trade Kyle Rudolph, then they extended him. He's really good. I mean, catch touchdowns. Dalvin Cook, who is extremely talented. Now, I heard a stat. He's only played 17 of the possible 32 games through his first two seasons. Now, granted, part of that's a torn ACL. But he's really talented. They got rid of Latavius Murray. But they're just their starters on offense. If Kirk Cousins can just play decently well, and he had moments last year, they could win the division. To me, both those two teams are double-digit win teams. I like the Bears over 9.5. I like the Vikings over 9. And they also re-signed Anthony Barr. Like the Vikings are really good. You could argue on paper they're better than the Bears. I don't hate the plus basically 2-1 Minnesota to win the division. I don't like the Packers. From the simple fact, I don't trust their coach at all. I just do not trust their head coach at all. I don't think the quarterback already doesn't like him, doesn't respect him. Now, obviously, if the quarterback just plays out of his mind, that quarterback, his name's Aaron Rodgers, you can beat any team on any given day. Their defense actually is not terrible. They signed the two Smiths, Zadarius and Preston. Signed Amos from the Bears. The Alexander, the corner they drafted, I think 2 years ago, is really good. They're a good team. Like, on paper, they actually have some talent. I just don't trust the head coach, literally at all. I don't. I had heard things about him before he got the Tennessee job, that even Sean McVay wasn't really that higher on him. Then somehow he became a coordinator, and when he was a coordinator, the Titans were not very good. He tears his Achilles, and again, I'm not, like, tearing Achilles is not some indictment on him as a coach. But it does, like, that limits his ability in the OTAs. Like, he probably wasn't able to do as much. How healthy, it's crazy we were talking about this, but how healthy is the coach going to be for training camp? I don't know. I don't see the Packers as a playoff team. I actually think it's more likely, and this is going to sound crazy, and people are going to be like, I don't hate the Packers. I want to see Aaron Rodgers be good. He's one of the more fun players I've ever watched in my life. But if this season for them is a disaster, like, what if they went 5-11? Is LaFleur a one and done? Because I actually think of all the coaches that could be a one and done this year, just given the expectations for the Packers. Like, can you imagine if they went 5-11 and Rodgers just hates them? I could see LaFleur getting fired. So the 9.5, I like the under. And then the Lions, you know, they actually had a pretty good offseason on paper. Added Danny Amendola, kind of get that winning culture that Patricia knows. I love TJ Hockenson. They added Trey Flowers, overpaid, but that's what you got to do. If Stafford, I already liked their receivers, even when they got rid of Golden Tate. Those two guys made plays. The running back they drafted from Auburn last year is a good player. Their defense needs to be a lot better. But Matt Stafford is proven. Now, his wife, I think, had the brain... I know, had the brain cancer. She had to go back. Hopefully she gets through this just fine. Like, to me, that is somewhat of a curveball in this. If she has any more complications, I can't even imagine being Matt Stafford trying to focus on football. But assuming she's fine, she makes everything out of it okay, and he's able to kind of focus, and she's her health is good. To me, the 6.5 number on them, I think they could be a 7 or 8 win team. I don't think it's crazy they get to like 8 or 9 if Patricia's good. Now, I don't have any information to assume that like Patricia's going to be a lot better than he was last year, but he was terrible. Now, the one thing you'd say is they did bring in a lot of New England type guys. So if he's screaming New England gospel, you need guys to kind of hear and believe in that gospel. Well, Trey Flowers believes in it. Danny Amendola believes in it. TJ Hawkinson, a dude from Iowa. Like, that's basically New England of college football, Iowa. Obviously, Stafford, just a high-character guy, is going to listen to anyone. So they, I think he... If we're going to find out this year if Patricia has anything else left in the tank. Like, if they're just terrible this year, he's just going to be fired and be a terrible Belichick disciple. But the more I thought about it, just looking at their roster a little bit, and again, I'm still a sucker for Matt Stafford. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Fame player or anything. But if he's on... They have weapons for him. TJ Hawkinson is a really good player. That was a good pick. It's not crazy to think that they're really competitive. So the Lions, I actually like the Lions more than I like the Packers. But again, I strictly hate the Packers because I think their coach is a one and done coach. July 8th, I said it. Matt LaFleur is more likely to be a one and done coach than he is a playoff coach. So Bears, Vikings, both over 9.5 and 9. You know, the value, I couldn't hate on either taking the Bears basically 1.7 to 1 or the Vikings 2 to 1. You could do either one to win the division. I wouldn't bet on the Packers or Detroit to win the division. Even though Detroit, I mean, would be the ultimate sleeper, be your classic worst to first team. Every year we have it, right? You get them 12 to 1. So you put $100 down, you make 1,200. You want to get really bold, you put 1,000, you make 12 G's. Their roster, though, like I said, is a little better than I thought on paper. This division actually sneaky should be not bad. It's why it's going to be hard. Like, LaFleur's got to beat Nagy and Pagano. Minnesota, you got Zimmer and all of his offensive coaches. And then Detroit, you got Patricia. This is a weird coaching division after the first two teams. But I'm excited to watch it. Appreciate everyone listening. Have a good week, and I'll see you guys again Friday.